Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
This week, on a special bonus episode of Meat and Three, we find out how Brexit could be changing the way that Brits eat.
If you're not getting your food from the European Union, where Britain gets 30% directly, well, where are you going to get it from? As I put very succinctly, bye-bye fresh peaches from Italy, hello tinned peaches from Florida. Bye-bye fresh oranges, hello tinned oranges. Bye-bye free-range beef, hello hormone-injected beef.
Tune in to hear about the UK's struggle to stabilize its food system on Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's that? Bird calling? Hey there. This is Emily Pearson. This is the Main Course OG. Today is Thursday, February 13th, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Patrick Martins and Trig Brown.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you know.
How's it going, guys?
You know, it's been a week. Missed you guys since last week. Everyone's looking fresh and a little rained on. New York has been rainy all week. It's a little dreary. But we're excited to be in the studio today. We have two very special chefs with us. We have Guy Arnone, executive chef of Otto Pizzeria. Yes?
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. I was going to say also a longtime friend of mine, of Heritage, of Patrick's.
That's right.
And a disciple of the great butchers, the Macellaios of Italy, Cesare yep. Casella, and Dario Cecchini.
There's not too many better than them.
Do you like that intro for yourself? Do
yeah.
you feel to be tied
it
to the great
enough.
Butchers?
No, I'm very proud that I've been blessed to have good teachers.
The teachers are important. Yeah. Mentors are special. We also have another longtime friend from the southern end of things here in the country. Our longtime friend, Robert. I always say your last name wrong, Robert. Is it Sterling?
Stelling.
Stelling.
Yeah, silent H.
I was going to say, there's no yeah. R, so I don't know where I was getting that. Stelling. We have Robert Stelling.
The H is an unintimidating. It looks intimidating.
It intimidates
as a
letter,
but it's
me.
Often silent.
It intimidates me in your name. So Robert Stelling. I like that. Can yeah. we get rid of the H?
You can.
Okay.
Sure.
Wonderful.
Robert. You put two L's in there.
Perfect. Yeah. Robert is one of the... Robert is the founder of Charleston's probably most famous restaurant, Hominy Grill, and the... We like to call you at Heritage the patron saint of all things breakfast, biscuits, brunch, an original OG Go-tober supporter.
Mm, yeah.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks
Was
for having
that intro
me.
Okay?
Good morning, everybody.
Was that intro okay from her?
Did
you capture the full Robert Stelling?
I'll probably do a few edits and bring him back next time. It'll kind of juice it up a little bit.
I see.
I'm starting my notes now. Born in a basket.
Born a poor child in the deep south. He rose to fame.
Robert, are you a southerner originally?
Yes, I am. I was born in North Carolina and grew up in North Carolina. So in Charleston, which is in South Carolina, I am technically a Yankee.
But
in theory, I'm a southerner.
We have a bit of a theme to our show today, very north versus south, so you'll give us perspective.
I heard that they call southerners call anyone a Yankee that's one town north of them. Is
yeah.
that true?
Anybody north from above Monk's Corner is pretty much a Yankee. Yeah. yeah. yeah.
Very unofficial yet official line, it sounds like. So we always start our show with a game of word association, and we are going to jump right in. Everyone actually has the same word this week. Guy, your last supper.
My last supper. This is, I get this question a lot. And
what?
I like to ask, like, how many courses? True?
How often are you thinking about death?
Yeah, how many courses are we talking about? But I'd go with my last supper. I'd have my first solid meal was my family's tomato sauce with pork neck bones. So I'd end it probably the way
we would do whatever it takes to get that delivery there on time.
Well, you know what? It changes with every generation, and in its current iteration, we're doing it with pork shanks that we get from you.
Oh, nice.
From Heritage. So you sear them.
So you're
onions,
already
chilies.
Working on your last supper. Should we be concerned?
Right now, no alarming behavior. It's not a cry for help. I just got hungry and put it on the menu.
It's like you will associate death with behavior. Most people would have said a physical thing. So so your parents' tomatoes, Trig?
Oh, last supper.
Yeah, last.
I think
number one.
Ooh,
McDonald's.
No, Wendy's. We know he's a Wendy's man. No,
he likes the number one.
I agree with Patrick. Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know.
Dollar slice.
Yeah, I'm stalling here. I wanted to. I feel terrible. I don't know. Back to me.
I like carne cruda. Carne cruda. It's the Italian version of steak tartare.
Robert, your last supper.
Well, a lot depends on the situation. If I'm kind of going to the gallows, I think I'd want my last meal at least 24, 36 hours out. So, my body is empty.
You need time to empty yourself?
Yeah,
you
don't want to be embarrassed in death, you know.
I hate this guy. The mortician's like, what the fuck?
I certainly would have something vegetable-based, because I don't think I want to go meet the maker with one of his creatures on my breath. So, greens and beans.
Last supper,
you,
maybe some
cornbread.
No, different things.
Yeah.
I really thought you were going to tell me, like, a biscuit with gravy, fried chicken. I don't know. I thought you were going to go, like, heavy.
He's worried about the mortician who has to.
Robert's worried
him.
About being judged on his last day.
If you don't have it by then, you know, there's no last minute grab.
Yeah, you can't do a full court shot down the court and expect everything to be okay. Even if you make the shot, it's still only 3 points.
All right.
Points.
Well, we've got what is this from first meal to last meal? We've got the pasta with a wonderful pork ragu.
You could have my wife's last meal, which would be you'd ask her what do you want for your last meal, and she'd ask, I don't know, what do you want?
She's very differential.
Wow, she's a easy person to get along with.
That would not be my answer. I would definitely be calling the shots there.
Cheese.
Cheese, pizza. Probably pizza.
Yeah.
But there's cheese on the pizza. You know, we're good there. Trig, you know, we're going to come back to you. You think about it.
Think it over.
Just, it means that you still have a long life ahead of you.
Yeah, I know. He's like, death, I don't think about it. When you get to be my age, kid, you'll be thinking about it.
Also, I'm not that sentimental. You know, it's like, I love my grandmother's stewed tomatoes. They're amazing. But, like, you know, I could be, you know, if it was going to be fast food, it would definitely be Bojangles, not McDonald's or Wendy's. Thank you.
We sell to a company, Hobbs, that produces the slice of ham.
The ham for the Bojangles-shaped biscuit. It is perfectly sized for them. Robert, are you a Bojangles man?
No, I'm not.
Is there a Southern chain that you will, is your In-N-Out burger?
No, there's none of that.
Really?
I try to stay away from it as much as possible.
Well, that's good. Good Southern chef there.
All right. So, as I mentioned, we have a bit of a north and south divide. We have some strong southern-northern battle lines in the studio. We have Robert and Trig representing the southern U.S. Guy, you cover southern Italy through your dad's roots in Sicily. And I just learned your mom is from Mississippi.
Well, my grandfather was born in Mississippi. My mom was kind of everywhere because she was a Navy brat. But my grandpa was born in Tupelo, Mississippi, birthplace of Elvis Presley, so...
That's your claim to fame.
That's kind of cool.
And Dario Cesare.
My great grandfather taught piano to kids like for Sunday school. So, good chance he taught Elvis how to play the piano. So, you're welcome.
Thank you. Very cool.
Wow.
And then, obviously, you know, representing the good old Northern Yankees, we got me and Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Although I said I think I just represent New York. I don't know that I can speak for the North as a whole. But we are going to jump in. Our section is called the Round Robin Weekly Based. We have 7-8 questions for the next 25 minutes. Patrick, take us away.
Let's talk about the south of Italy in the U.S. There's a huge division between the north and south in both countries, especially culinarily. Let's talk about the differences in cuisine and diet, for that matter. You want to start off? Let's start.
Clearly,
off with
Robert
the
is not country. Robert's not a good example of the Southern diet. He seems to only want vegetables. I was thinking.
They
I thought
grow
you
tons
were.
Of
I
vegetables.
Know, but
yeah.
I thought you were going to go a little heavier.
We're an agrarian society. It has a lot of vegetables.
I thought you were going to go a little heavier with your cuisine. That was all.
Oh. She doesn't like your Last Supper answer. Well, we'll deal with this after the show. But Guy, tell us. Speak for the mother country first. Well,
okay, I was a representative of Southern Italy this morning. I think anywhere where you have climates that tend to get a little warm and humid, you work a little more with the land, right? So in Southern Italy, you don't have a lot of cattle and bigger animals. You work more with it's plant-based diet. It's, you know, the proteins are less. Things tend to be a little spicier. You start throwing a little more pepper in it. It helps you sweat it out, and it helps cool you down, you know? So that's a comparison you can make from, say, Southern Italy to the American South, or even into Latin America, or any other countries that have heat mm-hmm. as a climate.
What do you guys think difference between North South
in the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, what stereotypes?
Well, the climate, of course, makes you know, big difference. The South never really industrialized, so it's very much tied to the land in that aspect. But you know, the way the country was settled makes a big difference. In the North, it's New England for a reason, because people came from straight from Europe and tried to replicate, you know, the small family farms, you know, producing dairy and everything they need, and very self-sufficient communities. And in the South, you know, Europeans who came there came from Barbados and were a few generations removed from Europe, and their goal was to get money. So they cleared land and planted money crops. Originally, it was going to be sugar cane, but that didn't work out, and they ended up with indigo and rice. But that was super labor intensive, so they imported mass amounts of slaves, more slaves than they could really take care of, and those slaves were left to kind of feed themselves, and they stuck to a lot of their African products. So okra and eggplant, you know, a lot of the peppers, you know, the rice cuisine that grew up there, you know, that became more of a mix. It has much more of that kind of cultural influence. And then the South never got the waves of immigration later, you know, with the Europeans that came and kind of have made Northern cuisine, you know, all this great pizza and stuff up here, and you can't really find that in the South.
Yeah. Well, you don't get a lot of cheese and anything in the South of Italy, traditionally speaking. You weren't making dairy products. You were working off the land. Where my family comes from in Sicily, the only thing that you can grow there is old. It's just rocks and weeds. So there's a lot of, you know, kind of dandelion, weed-based ragouts, rabbits, goats, small animals.
I mean, that was such a good answer to the question from both you guys. You know, I think we should end the show. Is that what you
guys
are?
All right,
time for the last supper.
Thanks, guys. Already?
Thanks, guys, and close the station down. No more shows today. That was good. Well, very interesting. Well, I was actually eating a sausage at Dirty French yesterday with Denny Abrams, a guy who owns 4th Street in Berkeley. Great guy. And we were eating the pork sausage at Dirty French, and he was like, the Southern culture would never make something like this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that, well, in the North, they have a lot of extra time on their hands, you know, because they're inside. They're more, you know, they're not so much outside. And he was like, no, they actually need the heavy sausage to fortify their bodies for the cold, you know, when you're going to have a 5-month winter. So it was a little out of necessity, and a little bit that they might have just been more time inside.
Mm-hmm. Does Dirty French have a cuisine focus?
I think they're maybe the phenomenon of like these big restaurants, big continental restaurant, huge shrimp cocktail, huge. And Denny, by the way, has eaten out every day, every single night since 1981. He's, you know, well-to-do every single night since 1981.
He is not someone who enjoys home cooking?
No, he just doesn't have like an active kitchen in his house and stuff. He's single. And he says that the way everyone always asks him, what's your best restaurant? What's your best restaurant? And the way he answers that is that the best restaurant is something that has a dish that redefines that dish. So like the shrimp cocktail at Dirty French was interesting. You know, he's like, that redefines it. So it's great.
That's a hard one to redefine of all things.
He also said the formula for a restaurant's 40-40-20. 40 ambiance, 40 food, 20 service.
Wow.
I don't know if that means anything. Or
20
smart.
On service seems low. I feel like these days that's coming up much more to be part of like ambiance and the whole dining experience. But correct
well,
me if I'm wrong,
Well, how much do
chefs.
You want your server to be involved with your evening, you know? This is what I want. Bring it out when it's ready.
Oh, yeah, that's a fair point. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah. There's a fine line between
fine.
Being
then
a
the
good
20,
server
then the
being
20%
weird.
Needs to be like 100%
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you better nail that 20%. Right. But, you know, sometimes you don't want them to be like too chatty.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. That's a good point.
Let's talk, what, like a diner where the waiter sits down with you and writes out all the 15 appetizers with a pencil.
I don't
want
to meet my server and then know about her kids and everything by the end of my first interaction.
All right, speaking of chatty, so Valentine's Day is tomorrow. Every restaurant's, I don't know, favorite, least favorite
boy.
Holiday.
Happy day.
I want to hear everybody's thoughts there. Here, obviously. So we, of course, know Valentine's Day means a lot of tables for two and set menus. And Trey, Patrick, and I were thinking about it, and we think maybe we should just close the bakery tomorrow. Like, what does that mean? For Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
fast
know.
Casual bakery, does that
I don't think we like, you know, Valentine's Day is not you know, obviously there's a little bit of spike in two tops of the restaurant, but you know, the people we're catering to are not you know, gonna
Hallmark.
Be taking their dates to we have like the bakery menu is like burger and fries, you know, at night anyway, so you know, not too worried about it.
Could be an early Valentine's Day. So, but tell us, everyone, what does Valentine's Day bring? We want to know, is there more public displays of affection? Are the servers chattier? Do fights break out? Tell us about your history
people
with Valentine's
order chocolate.
Day.
Chef, you want to lead on?
Robert?
Sure. There's not any fights. You know, it's all this two tops. Everybody wants to come at 7. But, you know, we did lunch, so we got, you know, secretaries for lunch and wives for dinner.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally, you know, exactly. Somebody sneaking in for a third one in the middle of the afternoon. Yeah. So that always got
wow.
the servers
did you give the guy the same table
and everything.
Then, that's where the
so
server
long,
can't be too chatty. The server's got to watch their tongue.
You also have
yeah.
to make sure
yeah.
that
they
the
know
staff,
the tip's going to roll.
The staff doesn't come and be like, you left your doggy bag here last time, earlier today.
Well, the public display of affection level will kind of let you know if it's the wife or not.
Hmm.
But yeah, if it's a lunch Valentine's.
So wait, the wife is less passionate?
I'm just saying they've got, you know, they've got a
they
busy
know each
family.
Other
it's
well.
Valentine's. They've been through it a couple times. But there have been a couple Valentine's lunches where we've seen someone get a glass of wine to the face. A good splashing.
So it's not a bad day then.
No, it's everyone's generally happy to be out, right? So
or at
everyone's
least they're
celebrating
putting a
good
or
they're in you. Love or it's nice or you know, sometimes like at Oto, we'll get, you know, maybe they went out for a romantic dinner a couple years ago and now they've got the kids. So they come to Oto and get pizza and celebrate Valentine's as a family. And so that's fun to see.
Well, the opposite end of the spectrum from love is grit. Let's talk about the grit.
How does that work?
I think Northerners think they're too legit to grit.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's
Patrick
true.
Patrick thinks he's too legit to grit. No. Do you know how to make a grit?
No, but I love that scene in My Cousin Vinny where he's like, oh, so the grit cooks faster in your kitchen than in any other kitchen in the known world.
Grits are a very Italian dish because of that scene.
Polenta,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So polenta. Can you guys discuss?
Northerners can't say the word grits without kind of a snicker in their finish. And so they just, you know, call it polenta and go with that.
So what do you think? Why is that? You think there's a bad stereotype of Southern cuisine or something?
I think it's a funny word. You know, it just is fun to say and you know.
How you like your grits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you prefer to cook your grits with water or stock?
Water. Stock and cream and all that stuff just starts to become something else altogether, you know. So if you're serving grits all day long, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, yeah, you don't have the energy to make up much stock.
Yeah, I hear you.
And then, I mean, I've always known of grits as being like shrimp and grits. That's a real staple. Is there, like, I mean, obviously they must be complemented very well by vegetables, but are there other, like, famous preparations for grits? or polenta. I look at
bacon,
the Italian.
Bacon and fried eggs. That's how you eat breakfast.
Yeah.
So what do you make? Like a little like grit cake?
No.
Bowl or it's over
bowl
it.
Of grits cook with it in fried the eggs in the top and bacon. And it's
so
the best thing ever.
Over easy the egg?
Yeah. Sun set up over easy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like you guys got cream of wheat and stuff like that. Yeah, it's corn.
And you would always ask people how they wanted their egg, right? Because everyone has a different, or did you have a set prep and that's how they got it?
Oh, no, they ordered it the way they want it. Right. You know, it's breakfast, you know. Everybody eats it.
Can you give us the hierarchy of choice in the South for how people want their eggs?
Mostly, most people want them over easy or scrambled. A lot of scrambled really hard, really dry. You know, send it back and brown it in the pan.
Terrible.
It actually gets an interesting texture when you got a big flaky pile of crispy egg, but it's not breakfast.
Yeah. And what is the least ordered version of egg? I mean, what are some of the very unusual ones that is like maybe a standard Southern tradition that, or are there just those scrambled over easy sunny side up?
The one that always throws the cooks when it comes in are basted eggs. And that you cook it on a flat top, and then you spoon hot butter over top of it, so you never flip it. Instead of being over easy, it has a slightly cooked texture on the top, and that's kind of hard to pull off. And the cooks always shortcut that, and you know they.
Is that easier to do in a pan than on a griddle? Because like you can at least baste with something.
Can
with
you
an
order
edge.
A basted egg?
I've never heard of it.
Yeah,
it's my people first time. Do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't let them use the pan. They have to use it on the flat top. It's not that hard.
Like I've created some requests here for how this is prepared, but
now
that's cool.
I'm gonna
I've
go
always
order
wanted
a basted
a
egg. I wanna see what it's all about.
Well, you get a big ladle full of butter on, it spreads out along the flat top, and then you just keep scooping it with a spatula and drizzles on it back on top of it. That way the butter's super hot, and it cooks it.
Basted egg.
All right. You heard
delicious.
It here. Gaetano, does that do it for you?
I'll be doing that after this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will you put it on a pizza?
Maybe I'll put it on some grits.
Oh. How does everyone here feel about eggs on a pizza? Is that like a Americanized brunch thing, or is that actually something that people would consider doing
in
Italy?
We got a couple egged pizzas at Otto, and people like it. The ones that like it come back for it. It's a nice sunny-side-up egg right on top.
So they don't get to choose if they want it over easy?
No, you don't get too many requests, but maybe let's not keep the word out that there's an option for scrambled. the occasional, maybe someone's pregnant and they can't have an over egg. I can scramble. If I can't scramble an egg, like I shouldn't be in that kitchen to begin with. So,
fair enough.
Yeah.
So the groundhog saw his shadow last week, and it sounds like the warmer season is upon us. We've definitely had a warm winter and really no snow here. So I feel like it has us talking, thinking good thoughts of spring. Let's talk about seasonality on the menu.
Because I asked about that also because Trig once said, you know, sustainability, I wouldn't go to a restaurant because of that. I would go to a restaurant because it's good. But a lot of good restaurants are sustainable. So it doesn't have to be, oh, everything's sustainable. So I was wondering, seasonality. Like, yeah. If you don't see seasonality in a restaurant, are you suspicious of it? Or are you just like, hey, whatever is good?
No, I mean, there's certain, like, wonderful aspects of seasonal produce. And if you don't embrace them, then you're just kind of missing out on a big part of, you know,
Would you look down on a restaurant if you went to a restaurant and you're like, oh my God, it's autumn and I don't see any of the key ingredients that are autumn based?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's more like when you see, you know, a tomato, like a bruschetta dish or something in the middle of
pale tomatoes are never a good thing.
Yeah, in the middle of the winter or something, you know, it's like it's you can get good tomatoes from California and you know it's gonna be or you know. There's always ways to get, you know, good produce all year round with the way the world works now. But, you know, I don't like to judge, you know, too hard.
No, I don't mean
but
really
but
judge.
Yeah,
I
you know,
just mean...
If, yeah, I mean, there's definitely seasonal aspects that I'm looking for people to be...
There, yeah.
Noting on their menu.
But if it wasn't sustainable, it wouldn't matter. It's funny. It's a chef. It's a true chef. Now, do you have an issue with local? Like, are you like, hey, this came from too far? Or
I mean, to
like,
a
would you get something
extent,
from Japan in a FedEx?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it all depends. You know, I mean, if you're, you know, it just really is super situational. I don't think it needs to, I think hyper-local is like kind of a fad. I think it should be local if you can do it, if it's sustainable. But if it's, you know, if it's so expensive it's not affordable because it's, you know, a mile down the road and you're getting the same quality from, you know, from Virginia, then I'm going to get the Virginia product.
Well, we had Jessamine Rodriguez from Daily Provisions on last week, and she was saying it's really about quality, and it's about making sure that it's a product and a business that you believe in and that you want to support. It's not so much about is it local or is it the cool trendy thing right now, but it's about choosing ingredients that make sense for the business.
Is that the case with you, Robert? Were you, or did you have more pressure to really show the locals there that...
That pressure built over a while. Our, you know, feeling is we wanted local, you know, we wanted local bank, we wanted local, you know, linen company as much as we can from an economic standpoint, was to keep all that together in the community. The distance that it was grown from the restaurant was not really ever a definition of local that we looked at. Being on the coast kind of halves our range. although we have great seafood, so, you know, you make up for it. But the idea of local being something that you really look for is just so overblown and overused. You know, as a chef, you're looking for the seasonal. You're excited. You're getting it. And, you know, local makes sense in a lot of ways, but if it's not good, it's not good.
How did you watch that change, I guess, over the trajectory of the restaurant? You know, you were a pioneer business in a specific neighborhood. Remind me the name of the neighborhood in Charleston.
We're in Ansonboro.
Okay. And you were a pioneer there. I mean, it was, you know, you were the very early wave of Charleston being a booming restaurant city, a destination. I mean, now it's every person I hear is going to spend a 4-day weekend at least because there's so many restaurants that they want to hit. You know, did you see that changed, I guess, from the early days to later on about where you sourced from and how you sourced? Or?
Well, people became much more aware of it, and then, you know, people jumped in and started really using it as a sell point and, you know, putting it on their Instagram and all, you know, they're having birthday parties out at the farms and, you know, it's an industry. You know, we have a, you know, over the years got a hub that is run by the Coastal Conservation League, Grow Food, and they, you know, bring in farm vegetables and made it a lot easier to have access to that. So it's become more available and less of a thing though now. So,
Guy, is it? It can be shankless to cook seasonally, but tell me what you think.
Seasonality is always, you know, especially with Italian food and the Mediterranean diet, it can get a little tricky because, you know, I think the last 4 years we've had heirloom tomatoes and white truffles have been available at the same time. That just didn't happen before. So seasons are kind of bleeding into other seasons. Some chefs, some restaurants, like, you know, it's the first day of spring and that menu just explodes with spring.
Mm-hmm. You're like, what
and
the
it's
fuck
just
are you
not
doing?
There yet. Yeah, you know, it's like, wow, they just got every spring ingredient possible on the menu today. It used to be, you know, fiddleheads and sting nettles would come in, so you knew it was happening. Okay. But yeah, you know, I gotta get those ramps, man. Have you heard anyone got the ramps? Where's the ramps coming from? What do you got? How much you pay? And they're paying a lot of money, and maybe they're not that great. And we have a responsibility to make good food for the customers, but it also has, we have a responsibility to the owners, to the restaurant, to make it profitable
and consistent.
And consistent.
Was there pressure to bring on new ingredients from them? I mean, do you have to always come up with something new? I mean, you also have to maintain tradition, but also...
Yeah, you want them. You want the restaurant to be recognizable to people when they come in, especially people that have been with you for 20 years.
Things that will never come off the menu.
You know, Otto's a pizzeria. 20 years ago, you know, you had, you know, the slice joints, and that was about it. Now you can throw a rock and hit a really good pizza place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep doing what you're doing? Are you going to try to spice it up? And yesterday was my 1-year anniversary at Otto. Before that, I was at Babbo for a long time. So I was able to kind of bring a lot of the same family's food and make it accessible and put a little spin on what we were doing at Otto. So,
is Italian food just cooking seasonally and locally? I mean, or are certain ingredients need
Italian
to be represented?
Most of the legwork's been done for you over the last 1,000 or 2 years. So if you just don't screw it up, There's a lot of tradition in Italian food. I like to say you just pick which story you like the best, and that's the one that you go with for whatever it is you're doing, as far as the history of a dish. And it's a very personable cuisine. You know, everyone is, you know, if their grandma made something or their friend made something, it's
my grandma's is the best, so, you know, good luck, man.
That's what I mean. Italian food is anything everywhere. I mean, you could be in China and cook Italian just with whatever's there. It's like,
it's a very, personal
I guess you need the
experience.
Tomato. You kind of need a tomato, right?
It's hard to find tomato paste sometimes in Taiwan.
Oh, does tomato paste count as a substitute when you don't have fresh tomatoes?
I mean, you know, sometimes you need tomato paste and you don't need fresh tomatoes.
Thickened. I always thought it was just a thickener. I didn't know it could be a full-on substitute for tomatoes.
It's usually a component. But his point is that Italian food with the tomato kind of sauce did not make its way to Taiwan. Hard to find.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're like, you know, when you want to make a sauce and, you know, toast tomato paste to build the sauce, and you know, it's, and you know, tomato paste is definitely not a substitute for tomatoes, but it's definitely an ingredient used differently than a fresh tomato. So you know, if you can, you know, obviously a tube of tomato paste in the grocery store is different than like you know, locally made artisanal product, but you know, regardless, that tomato paste adds character to your sauce or whatever, you know, in a different way. So if you can't find that, it can, you know, change the nature of what you're making.
Well, speaking of adding character, each of your restaurants has added character to a kind of unvisited, unpioneered neighborhood. I mean, it's funny, the heart of the West Village was not known for tons of great restaurants, and Babbo and Otto opened within two blocks of each other, and it's a destination. It's like the hottest corner, you know, in the city culinarily for years. Bushwick, I'm sorry, tell me the name of your neighborhood again, Robert, in Charleston?
Ansonsburg.
So, what's it like pioneering a neighborhood?
Well, when we first opened, people commented that they wouldn't want to come up to that neighborhood at night because they would get stabbed in the parking lot. So we had to overcome
that. Is
that
why you were purely a daytime
That's
business?
That's a good neighborhood. Yeah.
You're like, we've closed our parking lot. It's safe.
We will not serve dinner, breakfast and lunch only.
Well, you know, the finances were really unstable, and you know, I needed the money.
It is very sad that certain neighborhoods, that's dangerous. This
well, around
right
here, Bushwick,
dangerous.
For sure.
I think it's been more painful to watch it gentrify, you know, over the time that we were there. You know, it was my joke was that, you know, when we opened the restaurant, the employees all lived in the neighborhood and worked there and walked, and the customers drove, and then over time that changed, and the employees were having to commute 45 minutes to get to work, and the customers were all in new townhouses all over the neighborhood. So, and then Airbnb started rolling into the neighborhood, and that changed the character. So, you know, it was, that part is painful that you've missed the old neighborhood.
Yeah, the old
neighborhood. Yeah.
I moved to New York 10 years ago and was already pretty gentrified, and the people on my block that have been there for forever, born and raised in the Bubba, man, 10 years ago you couldn't walk down the street without getting stabbed. Those were the good old days.
Really?
Huh, okay. Good old days. Good. All right.
The only thing I fear is random violence. Organized violence, I mean, you know, no one's going to pick on you anywhere, anytime, even in the 70s or 80s, you know, I mean, 60s, there was, you know, but there might have been more random violence, and that is terrifying.
But I think that's also what was coming out of a lot of these neighborhoods, was the random, the fight that wasn't supposed to happen, the wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, there was, I don't know, I feel like there's less random violence now.
I think there's still plenty of bad neighborhoods to find. We just have to go out there and find them.
Yeah, so are we all going to open a restaurant in whatever that next bad neighborhood is?
Let's go open restaurants in bad neighborhoods and make them better.
So, your restaurant, yours was the first, well...
I mean, we're, you know, literally watching it gentrifying right now, which is, you know, it is definitely a little sad to see in certain rights, but it's also, you know, exciting in the sense that, you know, people will be able to continue to come to the restaurant and we'll be able to continue to have new customers. But, yeah, I mean, we're still in like a, you know, somebody got stabbed several times, like a couple weeks ago.
I got stuck in traffic trying to make a Friday delivery to you for like an hour.
Yeah. Are there any apartments available?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if that, you know, I don't know. What we definitely just want to make sure that we're always, you know, accessible to is folks that have been in the neighborhood for a while. So, you know, nothing on our menu is over like $23.
It's a very, you have a very interesting place. He's really redeveloping that neighborhood of Graham Avenue. It's very, very fascinating to see with both spots and the clients that live there mixing with the other cultures. It's great.
Yeah. You know, well, I think a lot of people are, you know, sadly kind of scared of the neighborhood because it's, you know, sandwiched by a housing project and a NYCHA project. So I think people, you know, thought, you know, to populate up into until Grand, and then it's kind of skipped over Montrose stop on the L train corridor. So, but now, now definitely there's just a ton of people over there, but, you know,
both your buses are so successful.
I mean,
they're packed. It's great. Yeah.
Well, so speaking of neighborhoods,
ascending and descending, is that what you're going to ask or no?
I was going to ask if there was another neighborhood and or city that you would like to succeed in.
Yeah. What's an ascending city for you guys?
That wasn't my question, but that's okay. The same. All right, fine. What's an ascending city for anyone, but where would you personally like to succeed outside of the city you're currently in?
Well, listen, I came to New York 10 years ago and because I wanted to be around exceptional people, and so I've been fortunate to work amongst them. I don't have a specific, I want to go to that town and make it happen. I think in this business, it's a pretty thankless business, so you want to go where you can have the most impact. So sometimes going to a smaller market or a smaller town, and you can show people some things that maybe they haven't experienced before, that's rewarding.
Would you go to like a Tumwa, Iowa, or some Tampa, Kansas?
I don't know, if it seemed like a nice place to be, like I have to be happy there. You know, you spend so much time in a kitchen that you want your time out of it to be enjoyable. You know, like I was visiting with a guy I worked with Cesare Casella, Aaron Oster, moved up to North Adams, Massachusetts, a little town, northwestern Massachusetts, not a lot, maybe 9,000 people. And he went up there, started making barbecue, and people love it, you know, just because there's not a whole lot of options around there. So he's having a big impact on where he is.
He's also based in their Museum of Modern Art, which is just such a fantastic spot.
That's a mass mocha.
Yeah.
It's like you take a little bit of... You're guaranteed a little bit of culture, though. It's like you left New York or you left a big city, and you know that at least you're still going to be surrounded by a lot of people are coming to you.
It looks like a lot of, you know, just people are just out there in the country. It's fine. And then you talk like, no, I lived on Madison, and, you know, they all left the city. I had to get out of there.
Yeah. Well, Mass Mocha is amazing. It like has a massive room of massive instruments where kids can just run around and play all the, like a drum the size of like a basketball hoop.
They got galleries that are 3 football fields long. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's
great. So it's good art, but again, it's a small town, but he's having a big impact. So, that's a cool place. There's a lot of cool places. Maybe go back to Panzano and Chianti and hang out with the butcher again and be in a small town.
But what would you do there? You couldn't create
a vegetarian restaurant.
Oh, I see. What about you, Robert?
Robert, what's an ascending southern city that you could find yourself in?
I don't think I'm that interested in moving to an ascending southern city. They're all kind of nouveau feeling. All cities in the South are filling up with people. You know,
a lot of Yankees.
Yeah. You know, some places like Raleigh and Durham have a lot of exciting stuff going on now, and they're in a great area as far as the agricultural support and producers and stuff. I think, though, if I was going to start over in another city, I would, in the South, I would go to New Orleans. Not that they need another great restaurant, but I need to be there.
Yeah, it's calling your name?
Yeah, at this point, I don't want to go out in the sticks and start, re-gentrify something else. I want to kind of enjoy a already gentrified location.
New Orleans is supposed to be a fantastic place. I think
there's essentially three neighborhoods.
Been.
I forget what they're called. They're three neighborhoods, right? And then Bourbon Street, and then there's like a river that serves as the border.
New Orleans is like you can go out and any bar at any time of night has an amazing house band, and the people are just charming and nice, and the music's good, and the food is great, and I don't know why all of us don't live there.
What about Nashville? Is that a great music town?
It's the music town, right?
Yeah. Nashville's awesome.
Grand Ole Opry. I've never seen Nashville like behind the scenes. I've only seen it like as the honky tonk bars, like the tourist part. Yeah. But
Nashville,
I think that if you know where to go,
it's a very white city. Like that's white music. New Orleans seems maybe more Creole influence and all that. And then there's Memphis, which is actually not the best downtown to go. I wish Beale Street always had been more romantic and
Memphis
beautiful.
Memphis is very disappointing.
They still have like vans go driving down those
little
streets.
No, Memphis is not even trying to be touristy. There's one short street.
It's, no, you're right. That's just funny.
Talk about wrong place, wrong time. Memphis, we were in the middle of a fight breaking out at a
restaurant.
Why
would they allow traffic on that block? I mean, just don't, no driving.
Wait, one of your best friends, what?
One of my best friends is from Memphis, so I just love to hear people say things like that. It's such
I
a
just,
Memphis
voice.
Is a great town.
We fly into Memphis to go visit one of our farmers, David Newman, in Missouri, and it's just, I don't know, Patrick, you've been going there for 10 years. I don't even think anything
has come around. The challenge for that town is to turn Beale Street into a more appealing place for tourists because there is so much history there. I mean, that's
a
city is failing the town and the South because Beale Street just isn't, I mean, your kid could get run over by a van on this little Band Street. I mean, there need to be other stores. There need to be a good restaurant serving good coffee.
You know, Elvis and Graceland can't carry that town for much longer.
No. Yeah.
Well, there's Sun Studios. That's my favorite
space.
Well,
you got Sun Studios.
So much history.
Graceland.
Yeah, and there's some good museums, but yeah, it's not. There's nothing else cultural.
Like
there's history. Yeah, there's history and museums and learning about the past. But where is the future of Memphis? I don't know.
It's more Elvis, I think. It's just keep.
I guess so. More all right, we have a very important question before we go to a quick break. We are a food show after all, and this week was the Westminster Dog Show. Patrick was there himself. He would like to know, if you had to eat one breed of dog, which one would you eat and why?
I would
and
eat
how
that
would you prepare
poodle,
it?
Because I don't want to, it didn't deserve to win. The ultimate justice, it gets eaten.
The standard
I want to buy
poodle.
It and then eat it.
Well, I'm glad
I think
you brought
this,
that butcher, how to butcher
a poodle
while you butcher packet.
That poodle should win. I don't like the way they're cut. What an uncomfortable dog. They should, anyway.
I don't
Scotty
like the look of those poodles.
Won.
I just don't understand what's with the hairstyling of what. Why is that part of the dog show? Isn't it supposed to be based on like commands and their teeth and their body structure? What's with the grooming component?
It's not so much commands, other than
that
they
have to
walk
be able to
politely. Yeah,
I just like
I
the
don't
announcer.
Get it.
Like it's the American Malamute, good with children and good apartment dogs originally. Originally a worker, now a house dog.
Well,
the Malamute.
The toy dogs are funny because they're like, this dog has no purpose other than to be your yes. companion and possibly alert you to intruders.
This dog fits in a purse on the subway. The Shih Tzu. Shih Tzu.
Often approved as an emotional support dog.
Yeah.
I think you have another career in your back pocket
here.
I could
be the dog
You've
show
been a great
announcer.
Yeah, yeah.
The you Jack know, Russell Terrier, bred to get rats, now a funny dog and barks a lot. The Jack Russell Terrier. Jack Russell.
If you know Anchorman, then you know about the Karen Terrier.
The poodle. Patrick would like to eat one. He doesn't like you. The poodle.
All right, on that note, we have to take a very quick break, and we will be right back with a little bit more with Robert and Guy.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Based on an eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
All right, and we're back. We are broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is the Main Course OG, and we've been in studio with Guy Arnone and Robert Stelling. Welcome back, guys.
Great to be here.
Good All morning. The letters.
Yeah,
are
I thought
pronounced.
You were going to give us a special announcer voice, Gaetano.
Couples only. Couples only on the rink.
Is that your ideal Valentine's Day?
Yeah, that's right. We're gonna go to the skate rink. Ladies' choice coming out now. Looking hot. We're going counterclockwise. Remember those days? Counterclockwise. Aya Kamosi. Here comes the hot stepper, kids. Last skate.
Oh my gosh! Is that what you're doing for Valentine's Day? Are you going skating?
No, I'm cooking.
You're cooking.
I'm working in the kitchen.
So right. Robert, yeah. But first of all, before I mispronounce it, all the letters are pronounced in Robert, right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's not a soft
yeah.
Robert.
Yeah.
Can you tell us your Bill Murray story?
Bill Murray story. Yeah, sure. We had a prep kitchen, and a kind of half-son of his was working in our prep kitchen that we weren't really aware of his relationship. And one day the door swung open, and Bill Murray poked his head in and just kind of looked from side to side, and everybody looked up and, whoa, Bill Murray. And he says, Caleb here, I have a bicycle for him. So he wheels in a bicycle for his son and gives him the bicycle. And Caleb, you know, was not very excited about it. And so it went back in the storeroom and stayed there. And a few days later, Bill Murray shows back up, and he brought Caleb a lock for his bicycle. He brought Caleb a really nice new lock. And after he left, Caleb said, he spent more money on the lock than he did on the bicycle.
But you also had no idea that this guy who worked for you was related to Bill Murray.
No.
Why did he give him the bike? The bike was just because he didn't like that he was walking,
I don't know his sense of providing for him or whether.
What kind of bike was it?
It was kind of a beater, yeah. So I assume that it was coming from somewhere else, and he was passing it on. But then the brand new lock showed up, which would keep a bike in New York firm and in place. And in South Carolina, at most, all you do is turn it upside down, so it takes somebody a little bit longer to turn it up, and then you run out and stop them. Or they see it, and they're like, too much trouble to turn it over. So
keep lock.
Yeah, little known fact, Bill Murray lives in Charleston.
Robert, what actually brings you to New York this week? Any
besides the show?
Well, yeah, besides wanting to see us. I know we've been itching to have you on and to visit, and it's been a while.
I've got a couple projects. Talking to somebody about doing some consulting and opening a hominy store online. So we'll see how those work out. Mostly, I'm piggybacking on my wife's suitcase, so she had to come up for work. And
she's in the theater, right?
She is. She's an opera producer, and they were doing a photo shoot, and then they couldn't get it together, so we ended up having a nice little Valentine's week in New York.
Very nice. She does amazing work with schools and children, too, right, in theater?
Some. She's been producing the summer... The opera at the Fisher Center at Bard in the summers. That's been her big steady gig the last few years. So,
very cool.
Well, we're going to look for the grit on the online hominy store, right?
Are we
going to be able to buy... Will it be already cooked food or
do you have the hominy.com domain name? That'd be cool.
You better get it.
Yeah.
Before we get out.
You heard it here first.
I would own so many.
I hope I do, but who knows?
Someone's getting it right now.
It's probably Cesare Casella.
I think I take the hominy and the webcam.
Tell us about Hoda. Which one of us is more the Hoda character?
From the Today Show?
Yeah.
Well, Hoda, it's Hoda and Jenna.
Hoda and Jenna Bush. I got to do the Today Show a couple weeks ago and cook, and that was just a wild 3 minutes. It's like...
I love Hoda.
Hoda's cool. I've done some local TV, and so I kind of knew, all right, you're here, and the camera's there, and you try to smile. But then you get down to Rockefeller Center, and it's like, oh, man, this is a much bigger deal. And you see Al Roker come, hey, man, what? Fuck, Al Roker? And then they start counting you down in 5, 4, and then Hoda goes, how do you say your name? Gaetano Arnone. She goes, yeah, you're going to say that. Hey, okay, so we're back at the chef.
She's what? Like, I will mispronounce that.
Yeah, you're going to say that as Gaetano. And then,
well, she protects herself so she always looks pristine and doesn't mess anything up. So and if anything, you're the deer in the headlights.
You kind of just go through the
only
3 minutes.
He knows his name.
When they tell you right at that last second, you probably are like,
listen,
you're like, do I say it now?
You got
wrong.
Carson Daly staring you down. It's hard to remember.
You're like, Ryan Seacrest. I mean, Guy Arnone. <That's right.
laughs> Yeah, so it was a fun experience. And, it's over really fast. I don't remember much of it.
Good thing it's on national television.
Do they make fun? I mean, in the old days, like when chefs were to go on the late night talk show guys, they would kind of.
They kind of wanted to make it, and they have a really really good crew in their kind of their kitchen setup, and so they get everything ready for you, and the chefs can be as involved or not as they want. You go in, you kind of just go through the steps. It's all really kind of prepared, and you've got about 3 minutes. And Hoda and Jenna got back there and made stuff with me. And
was Al in
office? And then
you always
have to have the finished. You always have to have the finished product. Yeah,
you have the finished plate. That's done ahead of time, so it looks nice. And you tell them kind of check the recipe online, and that was it. Kathy Lee stopped by that day, so everyone was drinking.
So everyone was drinking.
Yeah.
Did you nail it? I mean, did you get it perfect?
Yeah, I just remember during it, like, I didn't cut myself. Don't cut yourself on television. Don't spill something on Hoda on television.
You know. But did you say witty things? Did you say anything observant? Or
I think I did. It was the first time. I don't know, man.
You don't remember.
I don't remember
detail.
Much of it. And then watching it was weird too. So,
it's but national TV. Like, would
it
you do it again?
National TV. But of course, I'd do it again. It's always good for business.
What was your butt? It's the third hour.
No, you know, I called my mom, and I'm from Southern California, and so they called everybody. Guy's gonna be on TV tomorrow. But because they tape delay it, 10:30 Pacific is 1:30, so the Trump impeachment preempted the entire thing, so no one on the West Coast got to see it. I got white broncoed.
Yet another injustice related to Donald Trump.
And that was it. So, Mom, everyone's calling me.
You're like, don't worry, there will be a link online.
Yeah, so hopefully... hopefully enough people got angry by that.
Was Al standing behind... panel with
Al
weather Roker. Behind him.
Al or? Was just kind of popping through every once in a while, but I did get to see the Smuckers birthday thing because Willard Scott used to do.
Damn,
and I was in the green room doing the same thing. Hey, it's Mabel Francis, 102 years old, looking great, Topeka, Kansas. Hey, we got Merle.
You would be great at that.
102, looking sharp and young as ever. All right, Smuckers. Oh, I don't know. Is Smuckers a sponsor?
No, Heritage.
I don't think so.
It's the Heritage Centennial Birthday Hour.
Does Al Roker do that now?
Roker does it now.
How many people are over 100?
There was a lot more. You would get like one a week with Willard Scott. Yeah. Now it's just like, and for our 702-year-old woman.
Everybody's living a lot longer.
Looking great.
And for the people on life support, still kind of alive.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, I love that that exists. I love Hoda. I love Kathy Lee, the morning show people. Although they're vicious to each other.
They're having a lot of fun. Like, that's what I noticed. Like, everyone seems
behind
to be in a
scenes.
Pretty good mood.
Matt Lauer, like, backstabs this person. Like, they didn't get this story. I mean, it can be a tough
Hey,
crowd
listen,
too.
I've been, like, how many guys great. Did you come up with in a kitchen that you worked next to every day that you wanted to burn? You know, like, you work with people. Sometimes you don't like everyone you work with, but you got to go to work.
Or you marry them.
Are you looking at
Yeah,
us
that's why they compare it to a family.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they look like they have so much fun. And then when they do the recaps, like, at the end of the year, they're showing, like, I was watching towards the end of the year, they were showing, like, everything they did as a team in 2019 and all their, you know, offset stuff that was produced. And Al and, I can't remember
what
the other
cool
anchor's name. I'm blanking on his name.
Matt Lauer.
No. Anyway, he's blanking on his name. But, like, they go and they did, like, cryogenic chambers. And
Charlie Rose.
They're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. I always sort of, that was something I always wish
I'd like
I
to have a
did.
Window with a bunch of people screaming happily for me outside every day while I did my job.
All right, so you went on the show to promote Oto. What's new at Oto? Anything
well,
let's say
I just
have
my
to?
First anniversary at Oto, and so we're just changing things up. We got Valentine's Day tomorrow. Come on down, couples. We're getting ready for kind of to celebrate Carnival. This is our, you know, Italian Mardi Gras. So we're going to be doing some kind of Venetian stuff and some cool dishes there. And then, you know, it's getting into spring. So, you know, the best season's the next season. Mm-hmm. Food wise.
Very nice.
Now we need a pizza. Maybe with an egg on
Anything
it.
Anything special? Wind Sun? New menu item or anything?
Ooh, well, I mean, we just put some, it's not a seasonal item, but we just put, we got these... This bean paste from Taiwan, imported from Taiwan by my friend Lisa from her pantry company called Yunhai. So we have this new firewood bean paste noodle dish. It's really tasty. We're gonna wait for spring to actually come before doing any real changes. But you know,
spring is a big change.
Yeah, I mean, a few things change. You got to get some new stuff in. It's fun.
All right,
Robert. Any best bites since you've been in New York?
I went to Anton last night. That was really best bite. We had some great sushi. I forget the name of the place, but I can get myself in front of it without a map. It's fine. Some disappointments this trip.
Oh.
So,
pray tell. No, just kidding. Don't
I mean, I kind of want to know, but you well, know, we won't put you on the spot.
Kind of so much fast casual now, and they feel like these empty kind of boxes and yeah. the stuff coming out of them. And if you don't know where you're going and you're hungry and you end up in one, it's disappointing. So that's a big change for New York since I lived here decades ago, or one of the many changes. But
right. Shitholes like Winsome Bakery. No, just kidding.
Well, but, you know, we got a few good places you can definitely eat today. And but I see what you mean. I think there's you have to be an educated eater. Not everything is a good
choice.
Well,
go check out this place, Winsome Bakery. It's fast casual. It's just down the block. You can walk.
Oh yeah.
It is a very good version of what you say in many places miss.
It's also though like so you know it's not like we just popped up in a random place. You know, it's like a puzzle piece fitting to the other restaurant. So yeah,
and the community, which is filled with bakeries.
Yeah, there's
a bakery tetoir there.
Yeah,
it grows out of the cement.
Mid gentrification. Good bread now with less stabbing.
But we still get
it. You heard it here. The voice of Heritage Radio.
I want you to be our CNN. This is CNN, James Earl Jones.
This broadcast brought to you by pigs. They're only delicious. That's really all they're there for.
We should just pay James Earl Jones to be like Heritage Radio Network.
I like Guy.
Oh, he's pretty good.
I'm much cheaper than James Earl Jones.
Guy, do the poodle thing again. Talk about eating the poodles.
Sign us off, main course OG. Do our official sign off.
Today we want to recap about the poodle. It's got balls of hair on its hips to keep it warm. It's lean, so you'll have to braise it. Patrick doesn't like you. Poodles.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks for a great show, guys. This is the main course OG. Stick around for a taste of the past, and we will see you next week. Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.